Welcome to Cheetah and the Root. I am Jeff Press, author of the book Get Rich Cheating. My invisible partner is Steve Papa, author of the therootpundit.blogspot.com and the Rootage Guide to whatever it is. He says it's the Rootage Guide to, and another guy that does all this stuff, and he's just the best, but he's invisible. As am I, occasionally. Today is Thursday, unknown date, unknown month, unknown year, and there has been a lot of news since we last spoke. If you're listening in live, consider giving us a ring at 888-874-4888, and tell us what you want to talk about. Politics, sports, business, sex, celebrity. There's a whole world out there. I just want to talk about what it's like to hug your kid, and now that's pretty great. And random noises you hear in the back of your mind. Whatever it is, we'll discuss it. Until then, let's take a look at some of the things that are happening. There's a sequester, which I'm just sick of it. Look, here's the thing. This is a political talk show, but sometimes you just get sick of the pro wrestling that is politics. I mean, it's predictable, it's derivative, it's government by crisis. And while previous things like fiscal cliffs and looming showdowns, I don't even care to keep all their names straight today, while previous crises have actually managed to get a few relatively progressive things done. Admittedly, not as much as we'd like, but in the grand scheme, considering the pigheadedness of the opposition, it's a decent movement. It's still no way to govern, and I can't tell you how frustrating it must be, particularly for Obama, I guess, to be in the beginning of your second term, a mandate, and not be able to get basic things. You're not be able to even, get past the basic of government work, and they keep punting it down every couple months. It's the end of the world. And, I think in 8 years we may look, or 10 years we may look back and just realize that they were quite good at governing through crisis, but at the same time, it's like the Republican policy of making things bad to blame the Democrats continues, even though it's completely wrong. But you know what? What do they care? So every 4 years or 2 years of election, not even two, because realistically, no one, it's the extremes that turn out for the midterms. So the Republicans are going to win some seats. Wait 4 years of election, so what? They don't really care. They're the same people basically are in power, the few new rabble-rousers, the Ted Cruzes of the world. By the way, let's talk about Ted Cruz, senator from Texas, sort of the remaining legacy of Sarah Palin. I've been trying to think about it out there. Maybe someone can help me. There's a movie, and there's probably many movies, where, like some monster is attacking. I mean, they kill the monster, but like a piece of the tail stays behind. So like, imagine you, I've been saying I like a lot, so imagine you slay a monster and it falls off your ship into the boiling water beneath. But one little piece kind of flip-flops on the deck of your craft. And then that little piece morphs into a new monster. The little piece is Ted Cruz, and the bigger original monster is Sarah Palin. Because, Sarah Palin put Ted Cruz over the top in the Republican primary for Senate in Texas, which was essentially the election because it's Texas, and we're still 8 years from Texas going blue. He is just, he's riding this wave of outrageousness, brings notoriety, brings support and acclaim and fame and power and whatever it is, this American political culture, this American cultural move where reasonable is quiet and unnoticed, but unreasonable is trumpeted and written about, because we're pretty much a bored consumerism media. Like, we need something extreme. So Ted Cruz is doing that. He's just being a jerk. And I want to share my hearsay evidence of Ted Cruz's character, and that is that, when he and I went to the same college, he was a few years ahead of me. He doesn't like it when I mention that I went to Princeton, so I won't say that. But there's a thing called outdoor action, which is when in the week or two, I think it's a week, maybe it's 2 weeks, I don't know. Anyway, the time leading up to the beginning of freshman year, you go on a camping trip with, I don't know, let's say 12 other entering freshmen. You know, it's randomly assigned. You don't know anybody on your trip. I did it. It was fun. I'm not really much of a camper, so I was kind of like, how do I poo? And I was like, oh, I know how to poo, but what do I poo? And then I was like, oh, sorry, man, that's your soup. But now it's the nutrition. And so Ted Cruz did this with some people that are friends of mine, not great friends, but I know them through people. We're having drinks, I want to say last fall, before he was elected, maybe in the summer. And they were telling me how on that trip, their outdoor action with Ted Cruz, they actually, like everybody else on the trip, essentially voted to leave him behind or voted to ask him to go home. I don't remember exactly, but basically, it takes a lot for, let's say, 12 kids entering Princeton to vote to abandon you before you even get there. Because, okay, we can make some judgments about the type of people that go to and graduate from Princeton or other Ivy League schools and elitism and all that. But generally speaking, you enter and you're full of hope and optimism and you want to meet new people and have new experiences and you want to get drunk, you whatever it is, and you're on a camping trip, and it's just like thrown in, and like, this is fun. Like, you don't care who these people are. You just want to hug and dance, and you're like, this is great. And in that environment, he was such a dick that people essentially voted to put him on an open spit and eat his flesh. Not even eat the flesh, just like smell the charred, burning flesh. So I'm sure Ted Cruz doesn't lose sleep over this, as people have pointed out to me, but nonetheless, it just shows that, you got to give him props for staying true to his character. He's always been the type that makes you want to burn his flesh. And now he's in the Senate. And my understanding is it takes 50 votes to start a fire in the Senate. So he'll probably be okay. But so there's those elements of the Republican Party. The extremists. Everybody else is pretty much interchangeable. I mean, it's always a business as usual. What I find sort of interesting when you look at the right is, are there cracks showing in the facade of extremism? Look, I've said on this show before many times that the right is now feeling the wrath of the Frankenstein monster that they created, that they, for generation, played on people's fear, both religious and racial and economic. They fed the uneducated, ill-informed. They basically would praise lack of information as a virtue and then take advantage of people. Basically putting forth, I don't say lies, it's too harsh, but like spreading misinformation or playing into people's beliefs. They're trying to change people's understanding of the real world to match the real world. They play into their prejudices and their assumptions. Instead of raising people up, they said, you're right to stay down. Vote for me. And for generations, that helped them stay in power and get power. And now they are seeing people that for generations have believed the lies they were told. And those people are now coming into office and they're becoming extremists and they're saying stuff like women can shut down a rape and not have a baby. And you know, all these horrible things that they're shocked about. But why should they be shocked? They've been saying, yes, you're right, for years. They've just been doing quietly in town hall meetings and on campaigns and ads. And now it's coming on the roost, and the rest of the country is shocked and appalled. So I've been a strategy for a while, and yet it seems like, you know, they are maybe slowly changing on things. I think of this Prop 8 gay marriage Supreme Court case, which, a quick pause, you know, Prop 8's coming up, the Voting Rights Act, you know, the justice system moves slower than politics in general. So all of these hot-button issues that the extreme crazy right was excited to have in front of the court are now coming up at a time when they actually would rather not have them be leading issues, because it reminds everyone how extreme and crazy that right is. But anyway, so a gay marriage is up. And it's sort of like, the Republicans are getting the message, the age-old quote, I believe it was Thomas Paine, who said, to lead, follow, or get out of the way. The Republicans have been actively building roadblocks And instead now they're either following or just getting out of the way. I think now 100 prominent Republicans have signed on to an amicus brief to the Supreme Court that the brief is suggesting the Supreme Court strike down Prop 8, which essentially means the brief from the 100 prominent Republicans are for marriage equality, for gay marriage. It was a big step. A lot of people from the Bush and Reagan administrations, you know, people that, you know, Ken Melman, sort of the least surprising gay Republican of all time, who got Bush elected and governed on the basis of playing to the fears of bigots, you know, that didn't like homosexuals. He's actually now, of course, leading the charge, leading this effort. I forget the list of other people, but, you know, they're former senators and congressmen and governors and mayors. There are a few current elected officials, and of course, NOM, the National Organization for Marriage, that did the that storm is coming out. They've said, "Oh, we're going to get you. We're going to target you." You know, yeah, I commend these people. They're taking a chance to get up there, but they're, you know, they're coming around because look, eventually they're going to be realize. I mean, I think thinking people realize that they're on the wrong side of this debate. This is a civil rights issue. Eric Holder said that today or maybe yesterday in an interview, that this is a civil rights issue of the time. The question is, are all people going to be treated equally under the law? And, you know, there are still those, like, any list of particularly local officials who say horrendous things about homosexuals and homosexuality and always make it about the children because, you know, who do we want the children to think that gay lifestyle is an option? Or do we want the children to think that hatred and bigotry and stupidity is the way I raise my... Anyway, but they are coming around. Sure, it's a political expediency, but so what? You know, in the end, who cares? In the end, I think they realize that, you know, even facing the wrath of NOM, the National Organization for Marriage, even facing some ads of theirs, those ads that come out and say, "Do you know that Congressman Johnson supports gay marriage?" are going to be like, within 10 years, they're going to look like, "Do you know that Congressman Johnson opposes child labor?" I mean, come on. It's the right side of history to support gay marriage. I mean, I obviously, this is the Progressive Radio Network. The Progressive Radio Network, we're hitting it raw. You guys don't need to be told why it's the right side of history, but I just always have felt like most really thinking people have realized it is, but then there are the politicians who have to consider their donors and their base and their, you know, the per word perceptions out there. Yeah, interesting. A lot of people on the right, they've either weighed in or they're waiting for it to go away. And I think that, I think the moment's out. What will be really curious to me is how the Supreme Court rules, because, you know, should public opinion sway them? Who's to say? I mean, over the course of centuries of jurisprudence and legal analysis, there's been various times when different scholars have said the public opinion does weigh in. But then there are the strict constitutionalists, the strict the originalists. You know, I remember in law school, they would say the best way to tell what a justice might rule is to see what he ate for breakfast. In other words, it's not always clear the law plays a role. I mean, frankly, you know, that and the fact that really, we know how eight justices are going to rule on every case. To me, that's not just absurd, it's obscene. You know, it tells us that these people that come in and say that they're going to weigh the law, they don't. They have, the decisions are made for them. And that's unfortunate. So anyway, it'll be decided by the Supreme Court at some point. I mean, obviously, no matter which way it goes, it's not the end of the issue. And if you think it is, I would invite you to Google the term abortion and Roe v. Wade. I just wonder, like, even NOM, like the National Organization for Marriage, they're saying they're going to spend all this money against people, but are they do they even really believe it, or are they just trying to justify their own fundraising, their own existence? It's like the NRA. We've discussed this before. They were essentially like a gun club in the past and promoted gun safety, but in order to justify their continued fundraising and continued existence, they've had to take sort of extreme ideas and push them forward. You know, it's in a way why they're the, in some ways the best lobby that there is, because they've gotten to a point now where, like, we're trying to fight to get back to super-duper crazy from super-duper extreme crazy. Like, we're so far from rational. It's ridiculous. And maybe that's what's happening to Republicans. Maybe rationality is sort of peaking around the corner. There's a glimmer of rationality. I think there are some Republicans who realize that they're aboard a dying ship. And dying ship, yeah, that's a thing. You know what I'm saying? The Republican Party is just fracturing. And it's almost like there's going to be a divorce at some point from the crazy to the, between the crazy and the rational. Because it's hard to keep that together. And what's interesting is, you know, see, as you may have heard, CPAC, the crazy thing where Rush Limbaugh once bounced, they're the Conservative Political Action Committee convention. It's a big proving ground. They would invite Chris Christie because he did some, like, he accepted Medicaid and he said Obama wasn't the devil. You know, and then they're keeping Romney and Sarah Palin are speaking because they're the future of the party. You know, there. I mean, by the way, Christie said he can't sweat the small things, which I think that was great. And we can, well, maybe we'll get to Christie in a second. But you know, this all this infighting and this pettiness makes you sort of, in some way, realize this horrible truth. George W. Bush was actually a great president. Not in the traditional, like, to do good things for America, but he was able to appeal and hold together, you know, all the different fracture sides of the Republican Party. The crazies thought he was one of them, and he acted like that sometimes. And the fiscal, you know, Wall Streeters thought he was one of them, because he certainly acted like that plenty of times. And the hawks, the war crazies, thought he was one of them because he acted like that. Like, all of the various extremes, and somebody somewhere more coherently together than I have written out what all those extremes are, all the different levels on the star. I'm not sure if it's a star or a triangle or some sort of crescent. But he kept it all together, and there's no figure like that in the Republican Party. Just like, you know, the last laments after Obama, you know, if it's not Hillary, what are we going to do? Who's, you know, there are figures like Chris Christie and Jeb Bush are going to try to appeal to the center, to the moderates, but they're never going to get the crazies on their side. It's sad for them. I mean, look, we see it ourselves. Like, there are progressives that are very angry with Obama because he does some crappy things, drones, top of the list. I'm not saying, hey, drones are cool, but, you know, you can understand why you can want purity and you can want someone to be really great. But I think that on the left, we tend to get in arguments and try to change the position of the people we disagree with and try to use reason and rationality. And if you look at, like, the arguments and the pressure that we put on, it helped Obama, quote-unquote, evolve. Maybe that was a political evolution, not a personal, but he evolved on gay marriage, right? Those were his words. He came around because of the pressure and the arguments that were put on him. The Republicans, on the other hand, they just draw a line in the sand. It's absolute. You sign this pledge, you never raise taxes. You never raise taxes. Not like, oh my God, you had to raise taxes because the country was on fire. Let's talk about that. And it's just absolute. And that's one of the reasons I've always said they're a better political party, in that they stick to their marching orders. They don't sort of waver. You know, it's another reason why they're going to have trouble finding anybody that can bridge the two gaps, because they just don't seem to get along. We'll see who ends up pulling through as the 2016. I already started talking about that I was about to start talking about it. Did Chris Christie talk about, you know, can a moderate make it through the Republican nomination process? I don't know. I sort of feel like in 2014, if the extremists get wiped out again, they might have no choice to go moderate. But then the problem is they're not going to get wiped out because, you know, they're not going to have the same youth and minority turnout in the midterm as they do in the presidential. Someone pointed out the other day on a show I was on, Will.i.am is not going to make a hologram video for this. What else is the haps out in the world? Glenn Beck. Oh, this is actually, I'm going to back up. Ready? Everybody back it up. Beep, 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 beep. One of the reasons I think the Republicans are upset with Chris Christie is because he is the governor of a state. And one of the areas of great success for the right, both Republican extremists and the business right, like the Koch brothers, has been in local politics. Even in, like, blue state, look at, like, Wisconsin with Scott Walker, and Michigan, and Ohio, and, of course, Florida. Like, all these states that put through these extreme rightist, like, work, like, to work, and union busting, and even, you know, stuff like abortion and women's rights. Like, in the local areas, they've actually done a ton of damage. We feel good because Obama got elected twice, but, like, locally, the damage is getting done, and you all know from whatever's going on in your locality, that's where the real stuff happens, is, you know, in the state and local. I almost feel like pretty soon we're all going to have to carry around little laminated maps in our pockets to tell us what state we can or cannot, you know. We're going to change the highway system to avoid certain states because you just don't want to drive through Mississippi. But so they've had great success on the local level, and yet here is Christie bucking that trend. I think they're very, I think they're fairly upset about all that, and that's, so, you know, they're hitting, he's hitting them in their strengths, their strumps, and that's all they've done. A few other items of note in the news this week that I would wish to discuss. Dennis Rodman went on a peace mission to North Korea. Dennis Rodman, as you may remember, was a great rebounder in the National Basketball Association. He was sort of like the crazy, springy role-player guy, like Ron Artest, although Ron Artest has now changed his name to Meta World Peace. I guess Dennis Rodman, by doing this trip, is a Meta World Peace. Boom, you're welcome. But he's doing this trip to North Korea to promote things. You know, of course, they're all freaked out by him because they just had a nuclear test, and now this, like, you know, 6'8" guy with tattoos and piercing comes out of the ocean, and they think it's Godzilla. When he's over there, he's promoting peace and harmony, and I just kind of, like, I think it's a great notion, but I do worry that they're feeding this, you know, the North Korea's ability to control and manipulate other people, because the ancient Roman Empire said bread and circuses, distract them from the horror of their lives and bread and circuses. And North Korea can't afford to give their people bread, so they're giving them circus. And that's sort of what Rodman is promoting. Seeing the circuses, Glenn Beck is attacking the World Wrestling Association, or whatever it is, or ECWWF, no, the World Wrestling Entertainment, because they have two Tea Party characters that are the bad guys. Which, just to show you, Linda McMahon is a better businesswoman than she is a politician, because she can, you know, read the TV, if I'm sorry to use that double entendre. But why is Glenn Beck a type? Like, Glenn Beck is essentially a pro wrestler himself. I mean, he's a character. That's how he made himself into the great Glenn Beck. But Glenn Beck's problem is that he was addicted to being this crazy, really powerful person. He, you know, successfully did what Ted Cruz is trying to do, and now he's fading. He's a fringe figure now. He's not online. He couldn't get current TV from Al Gore. You know, he's trying to buy some other TV access. He's losing his influence, whether because people are tiring of his act or what, and he's trying anything he can do to get back into it. And what's silly is he's attacking the wrestling, which there is a demographic overlap with his, much of the listenership, although the wrestling is actually much more diverse. Part of the reason why one of the Tea Parties, you know, they've got a lot of minorities and even women that follow wrestling, and so the people that aren't all the white men, southern white men, know the Tea Party has got some things to deal with. So maybe going back to just trying to be a super dog, who knows? And the final item of news, I think, that we will discuss today, is that it seems that Silvio Berlusconi has come back into power in Italy. I actually didn't check the latest today, but his party was, like, a second in the election. The guy's party came in first, this guy, Beppo Grillo, who's a comedian. It's kind of funny, because maybe Berlusconi, like Glenn Beck, is playing a character. Maybe Berlusconi is like Stephen Colbert, and Beppo is Jon Stewart, and they can run the country. Berlusconi, by the way, he's the guy, you know, the bunga bunga, 80-year-old corruption, putting his lovers into positions of power and sleeping with underage prostitutes. This is the reason why you get into politics, basically. And he had bunga bunga coming out of his bunga bunga. I think it's kind of... kind of fascinating, although I think, you know, if they get into a place where this comedian is sharing power with Berlusconi, and Berlusconi wants to complete his comeback, and, you know, it needs to take out the comedian, all he really needs to do is have that guy host the Oscars. And with that, I think I will bid you adieu. This has been another episode of Cheater of the Rude. I'm not going to dive into the Oscars and the tweets and all that, because there's no point. They win. They got us to talk about them for a week. This is Progressive Radio Network. I'm Jeff Kreiser. Check me out at Jeff Kreiser, JeffKreiserler. On my book, Get Rich Cheating, check out Lee at Ruth Pundit. At Twitter, we're also on Facebook, or everywhere you want us to be. Thank you all for listening. This is Progressive Radio Network. I'll talk to you next week.